Okay, good morning. We left off with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So remember again, just a quick review from what we saw last time. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was a Talmud of Hillel. Good. His ranking in the class of Hillel? Katan Shebekulan, right? Whatever that means. Youngest of the Talmidim, maybe again the least wise of the Talmidim, whatever Katan means. But of course, then we begin to see that particular statement in context, and we begin to see who's the top of that particular class. Yonasan ben Uziel, excellent. So remember again, we saw the Gemara spoke about the power of Yonasan ben Uziel's learning. We also saw the incredibly prophetic message of Hillel, a message that we don't understand the totality of it right now, but in Meretz Hashem will become clear as we continue to learn about the life of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. What did Hillel say about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? Even though he was the Katan Shebekulan, how does Hillel describe him? Excellent. Av b'chokhma and Av l'doros, a father of wisdom, father of generations, which clearly indicates to us that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is going to occupy some pivotal and important leadership role, but the nature of that role perhaps will not become clear until later on. We spoke about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's early life. Again, the beginning of his Rabbanus was where? Was in the Upper Galilee, right? The Galilee Elyon, in a city called Arev. Wasn't very happy with that particular city. Didn't feel that the residents really appreciated him. I think we spent a good amount of time in the last class speaking about this dynamic, interesting dynamic of great people only kind of stepping into their own greatness later on in life. We see that by multiple biblical figures, post-biblical figures, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai seems to fit that same model as well. So let's begin in number four. We left off three paragraphs in number four. La'achar mikein. So after Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai decides to leave the Upper Galilee, so what happens? Avar liYerushalayim. He decides to come to Yerushalayim. V'sham hafach Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai le'echad migidolei marbitzei haTorah. It was only in Yerushalayim, number four, source number four, third paragraph in. It was only after Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai relocates to Yerushalayim that suddenly, again, he becomes known as one of the most prolific teachers of Torah. Kol chashu haya beis midrashim. His beis midrash was so important. Listen to this. Ad she'kasher nisraf beis churban ha'ir, karu alav chazal es ha'pasuk, es kol beis godol saraf beis. Zeh. Beis Midrash of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Shesham Hayu Masnim Gedolos of Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai ultimately again becomes known as one of the greatest Mabitei Torah, one of the greatest teachers of Torah, and his Beis Medrash becomes an address for the great sages, not just of Yerushalayim, but really of Eretz Yisrael. And we're going to see not just of Eretz Yisrael, but really of Am Yisrael as a whole. So this is really amazing. When Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is in the Upper Galilee, it appears that he's relatively unknown. When it comes to Yerushalayim is when he establishes his identity as one of the Gedolei Hador. Look at the last paragraph in number four. This is actually quite amazing. Bechagim, kishabau rabim lishmoa mi pives hilchosachag. Now remember, there's a concept of shloshim yom kodem achag. There's a concept of 30 days before a particular yomtiv to learn the halachos pertinent to that yomtiv. In the times of the Beis Hamikdash, when there was a concept of aliyah leregel, so, you know, yomtiv is an interesting construct because there's a concept of chatzi lachem, chatzi lachem. I'm sure you've heard this concept before. Yom Tov there's this duality. There's the celebration for the self and there's a celebration for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a spiritual component and there is a physical component. One of the things that Jews who are Ole Regal used to do is they would attend shiurim. What would the shiurim be? The halachos of Yom Tov. So here is actually quoting from the Gemara Maseches Pesachim something amazing, that on the Yom Tovim, where there would be a mass influx of Jews because of the mitzvah of Aliyah LeRegel, making the pilgrimage to Yerushalayim, Beis Hamedrash lo haya misugal lahachil bekirbo es hamon mehaboyim. It's actually quite an amazing image. There was no Beis Medrash that was large enough to hold Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai together with all of the people who came to learn with him. So where would they stay? Akein hayayoshev betzilo shel heichal v'doresh kol hayom kulo. The image is magnificently beautiful. So where would Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai hold his shiurim? Where would he hold it? Well, how would you translate that? Yoshev betzilo shel heichal. Right? So what he would do is he would literally hold shiur outside of the Beis HaMikdash. in the shade of the walls. Remember again, the Bayis Sheni. We're talking about now the structure built by Herod, right? Or expanded by Herod. So ultimately, again, it had massive walls. Now the beautiful part about that is they cast the shadow, a shade. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai would convene his throngs and throngs of Talmidim in the shade of the wall of the Beis HaMikdash. Can you imagine that scene? No Beis HaMedrash big enough in Yerushalayim to go out and contain the Talmidim who came from Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. The only place he could possibly hold shiur was outside of the walls of the Beis HaMikdash. V'doresh kol hayom kulo. And he would give shiur. He would teach Torah literally the entire day. An incredible and magnificent, magnificent image. You know, if you think about this, by the way, so, you know, it's harder for us to relate to this in Galus, but the Yamim Tovim, the Yechadosh Baruch Hu gave us Yamim Tovim, is the common denominator amongst all the Yamim Tovim is, what do you see from the fact that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was always able to give shir in the shade of the wall of Beis HaMikdash? Good weather. Right? So remember, again, we're used to a little bit of galus weather. But remember, you think about the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu structured the Yamim Tovim, specifically the Regalim. So Sukkis, Pesach, and Shavuos are all when it's warm, which is an incredible, incredible idea. Also, just the rachamim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the incredible divine compassion. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows, give me a mitzvah of aliyah l'regel, mitzvah to come to Yerushalayim, and Jews have to travel from all over. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu structures his Yamim Tovim at a time where, again, the weather cooperates. Weather cooperates. It's beautiful in Eretz Yisrael around the time of the regalim. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is able to go ahead and hold shir outdoors. Yes?
I thought we said that he said in a sukkah, specifically when it's not warm, to show
that we sit in the sukkah, so it's true, except you've been in Eretz Yisrael for sukkahs ever? What's the weather like?
Really nice.
It's really nice, right? So the idea is we don't sit in it in the heat of summer when perhaps it might be most pleasant. Remember, Chazal made that statement obviously before the advent of air conditioning. So in the absence of air conditioning, you want to be outside. The hotter it is, the more you want to be outside or be shaded. So Chazal really mean is, if you are planning a time to make sukkis, you would make it more in the summer. If you think about it, sukkis, at least in Eretz Yisrael weather, is at the end of the summer, right before the rainy season. So it's not the optimal time to be in the sukkah. All right, so that's Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So again, I will tell you, the image itself, you know, Halavai, we will be Zocha, Mir Hashem, when Mashiach comes and there's a third Beis HaMikdash. But the things that just you were able to see when you were Ola Regel, to be able to see a Beis HaMikdash, to be able to see Kohanim, to be able to see Karbanos, to be able to see throngs of Jews coming from all directions, but then to be able to see Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai giving shir in the shade of the walls of the Beis HaMikdash is just so magnificently beautiful. The image itself is so incredibly stirring. So take a look at number five. We're going to speak now a little bit about some of the details of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's life. So remember again, this is very important because as you've seen already from our studies with Elisha ben Avuya, understanding the personality but also understanding the historical context of any of these particular sages is incredibly important to fully appreciating and understanding their Torah. So I'm going to skip a little bit over here for just a moment to number seven. So the Gemara Maseches Gittin tells an incredibly dramatic story, a story that I'm sure you're all familiar with, because you've seen, I'm sure, different pieces at different points in time. Let me give you the background over here. The background over here, Let me give you background to the background. The background to the background is as for, actually, let's look at number seven. Let's begin. Abba Sikra, Reish Bar Yonid Yushalayim. So, okay, I will give you the background. So at this point in time, when this story takes place, the Romans, under the leadership of a man by the name of Vespasian, have placed Yushalayim under siege. Now remember, even in the years preceding the siege on Yerushalayim, what we call Eretz Yisrael, or what was known historically as Judea, was a vassal state to the Roman Empire. What does it mean to be a vassal state to the Roman Empire? It means you pay taxes, and it also means generally there was a Roman procurator. There was a Roman, like governor, there was someone in charge of Eretz Yisrael. So already again, there's been a certain lack of autonomy of the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael. Rome is there. That being said, Jews were still able to exist as Jews. The Beis HaMikdash stood. Everything was fine. Rome marches on Yerushalayim in an attempt to conquer Yerushalayim. Vespasian is with his armies. Remember again, the Romans are the mightiest empire on the face of the earth at this point in time. They're laying siege to Yerushalayim. There is a bitter dispute within the ranks of leadership of the Jewish people. What's the bitter dispute? War versus diplomacy. Should we try to fight the Romans, or should we try to go ahead and negotiate with the Romans? The Rabbanim were of the opinion, diplomacy. We have to try to negotiate something over here because we can't fight the Romans. They have a bigger army than us, they're better equipped than us, they're stronger than us, and if we fight them, one thing is sure, which is we'll lose. We'll lose. And maybe even if there's a chance of winning, the casualty count will just be so high. We have to try diplomacy. There was another group. This other group were known as the Baryonim. The Baryonim believed in armed conflict. They did not want to negotiate with the Romans. They believed in war. Now, you have to understand something. These Baryonim were not people of the highest moral caliber. And in general, whenever you have a chevra that wants to fight, that wants to do war, generally, it tends to attract a certain element as well. So the Baryonim, there might have been some people who were ideologically opposed to diplomacy with the Romans, wanted to fight, maybe even motivated from an incredible sense of emuna in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's possible. It's definitely possible. But at the end of the day, they also attracted a lot of other segments of society, which had absolutely no noble intentions, but were just looking to fight, just looking for machlokas. So listen to this story. Abba Sikra, Reish Baryonid Yerushalayim. So Abba Sikra, that was his name, was the head of the Baryonim in Yerushalayim. Amazingly enough, Bar Ach Seit Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai Hava. He was the nephew of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So just to give you the context over here, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai essentially is at this point in time the Gadol Hadar. He is the head of the rabbinic head of the Jewish people. He is advocating for diplomacy. We cannot fight the Romans. We will lose. Ironically enough, the head of the Baryonim, who are the guys who are advocating armed conflict, is who? Is who? His nephew. So same, his nephew. So what happens? Shalach lei, to bitzina legaboy. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai sends a message to his nephew, come and meet me in private. Meaning he recognizes Abba Sikra, his nephew, cannot go ahead and publicly meet him because remember, there's an incredible ideological divide and these two groups did not get along at all. Let's arrange a secret meeting. Asa, Abba Sikra honors his uncle's request, comes to see him in private. Asa Amrlei, ad emas avidetuhachi, vikatlisu lei la'alma bekafna. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai gives his nephew Musar. What are you doing? How long are you going to kill out our people? Now, let me give you a little bit of context to this. The Gemara speaks about, I really should have put this on the sheet, I apologize for not doing so. The Gemara speaks about the Gimel Atire Yerushalayim, the three wealthiest men of Yerushalayim. And they were Kaba Savua, Ben Sittes HaKesses, and Ben Gurion. Ben Sittes HaKesses, Kaba Savua, and Nakdimon Ben Gurion. Those were the three men. So the Gemara explains, by the way, these are actually interesting names. Ben Kaba Savua means what? The son of the satiated dog. Not a very popular child's name, right? How did he get his name, Ben Kaba Savua? He was such an incredible Baal Tzedaka that even the poorest of people who showed up at his home as ravenous as a dog was fed. Ben Sittes HaKesses, what does that literally mean? Tzitzis, or tzitzis, keses, is a cushion. Ben Sittes HaKesses was so fabulously wealthy that he never walked on the ground. He always walked on cushions. His tzitzis never dragged against the ground. They always dragged against cushions. Nakdimon Ben Gurion, the Gemara Maseches Tainus explains, was given that name because of an incredible miracle that happened when he borrowed water. He borrowed wells from the Romans. The sun stood still for him. Okay. These three men, so just to give you the context, Rome is besieging Yerushalayim. These three men meet with the Rabbanim of Yerushalayim and they say, look, We need to figure out a solution to this, right? They also agree that diplomacy is the way. But if you're going, what's the problem if Yerushalayim is besieged? What happens then? Nothing comes in, nothing comes out. Specifically, food. The problem with diplomacy is diplomacy takes time. So how do those two things shtim? So how I need time for diplomacy, but there's a siege, which means no food comes in, no food comes out. So these three rich men, richest men of Yerushalayim, come to the rabbinic leaders and they say, listen, we're going to buy you time. Because between the three of us, we have storehouses of wood, of oil, and wheat. So because there's wood, oil, and wheat, which means we could supply bread to the residents of Yerushalayim, and their collective wealth was such that they had enough supplies for a 20-year siege. 20-year siege. What's the problem? The Bar Yonim realize that what's the problem with this for the Bar Yonim?
No one's going to
want to fight if their stomachs are full. Right? At the end of the day, right, the only reason, most times, the only reason people fight is when? When they're desperate. But if you have food, you're not desperate. So what do the Bar Yonim do? And this was a tragic event. They burnt down the storehouses. Right? They burnt down the storehouses. Now, when they burn down the storehouses, Yerushalayim is plunged into famine. Immediate famine. There is no food in Yerushalayim. The Gemara discusses in incredible depth the extent and the ravages of famine upon the local populace. So now the Bar Yonim assume this is great. Because now we're going to have no choice but armed conflict. We're going to go to war the next day. The rabbis are still holding their ground because going to war against the Romans is a suicide mission. So that's what's happening. If Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says to Abba Sikra, what are you doing? What are you doing? Now, how long are you going to go ahead and keep us in famine? Now, yes. It sounds like his followers. I don't think he did it, but Abba Sikra is the leader. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is speaking to him as the leader of the Bar Yonim. How long are you going to allow this to go on? Now, there's one more important piece of the story, which is the Romans are outside of the city. The Bar Yonim are preventing anyone from leaving the city. So the problem is, even if there was a way to get out, to smuggle something, the Bar Yonim are blocking the exits from the city. No one gets out. No one gets out. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, what are you doing? Second line, number 7. How long are you going to keep this up? And you're killing out our people with famine. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is saying to his nephew, what is the matter with you? The Romans haven't even lifted a finger against us. Right now, true, we know what their intentions are. They haven't even lifted a finger against us. You and your followers are actively killing us out by sustaining famine. This is amazing. Amarle. So to which Abba Sikra responds, Ma'i Ovid. What does Ma'i Ovid mean? Literally, what do you want me to do? Di'i amina lehu midi katlule. So this is amazing. Abba Sikra says, if I try to say something to them, they're going to kill me. Which shows you what's happened over here. What's happened? So no one has control over the Bar Yonim. The Bar Yonim are running amok. They're running themselves. Meaning even Abba Sikra, who quote-unquote is the leader of the Bar Yonim, has absolutely no control over them. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, fine. Amalei, chazi li takanto li didite epok, after the havi lehat salaporta. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says to Zephi, okay, here's what I need your help with. I need you to find a way to get me out of the city. If you can get me out of the city, maybe Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, I, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, could negotiate something with the Romans. But I need you to get me out. Amarle. So Rabbi Sikra says, fine, that I can help you with. Listen to this. Nakut nafshech b'kitziri. Put out the word that you're very ill. V'lei say kulei alma v'leshay lubach. And let people come and be mevaker chola. V'aisi midi saria v'agni gaboch. Take a dead animal, the carcass of a dead animal, and put it underneath your bed. What? Why? Why the carcass of a dead animal put it underneath your bed? The smell. Meaning the assumption. So what happens, we'll put out word that you died. And what will bolster that story is people will think it's the smell, nebuch, of your corpse rotting. We'll put out word, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai passed away. Your students have to carry your bed out, but make sure no one else carries your bed. Why? dekalil at. Because if other people carry your bed, they will recognize, they will realize that it's a sham and you're not really dead. How will people recognize that he's not really dead?
Deadly.
Oh, the expression dead, meaning there's a concept called hachai noseis atzmo. When a person is alive, even if they're being carried, you actively shift your weight. Sometimes you're not even conscious of it. You actively shift your weight. When a person is dead, obviously they don't shift that. That's the lashon of a dead weight. A dead weight means there's no redistribution. The problem is, if other people carry what we call the bier, or the bed, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is lying on, they're going to feel that this doesn't feel like a dead weight. It feels like a live person. Therefore, Rabbi Sikra is saying, obviously, this plan only works like most plans in life. If what? If first of all, everything goes according to plan, but also, if there are very, very, very few people in the know. Right? Because the more people you have in the know of general and anything in life, the greater the probability of the information getting out. So you could tell a very small group of Talmidim who are going to be the ones who carry your bed. So what happens? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai follows the plan. He feigns illness. He puts out the word that he died, meaning students put out the word that he died. So his two most trusted disciples, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, are each carrying one end of the coffin, one end of the bed. And what happens? So what happens? When they get to the exit of the city of Yerushalayim, there are Baryonim guards there. What do the Baryonim guards want to do? They want to stab the body. Why do they want to stab the body? They have to understand something. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was probably not the first person to think of this idea of pretending you're dead. Because remember, here's the good news. They always let the dead out. Why? You are not permitted to bury people inside the walls of Yerushalayim. Which is why the closest cemetery to Yerushalayim is? Right, Harzis. Remember again, even though that's called, it's in the municipality of Yerushalayim, but you are not allowed to bury the dead within the walls of Yerushalayim. It's part of the Kedusha of the city. So even the Baryonim, interestingly enough, even the Baryonim had a basic respect for this and allowed the dead to be taken out. But they were no fools. They know people tried to go and take advantage of this and feigned or pretend, you know, fake their own death in an effort to get out. So this is a very simple way of telling if somebody's telling the truth or not with this, which is stab them. Simple enough, right? Stab the body. Okay. Amaluhu. Yomru Rabban Dakru. So it's interesting. So the Talmidim said to the Baryonim, come on. A little bit of Derech Eretz. A little bit of Derech Eretz. You know, we can't get along with each other, fine. But then the Gentile nations are going to say that the Jews stabbed their own rabbis' bodies. You know, they were just appealing like, come on. Come on, this is ridiculous. So the Baryonim said, fine. We're not going to stab him. Instead, what we're going to do is just going to shove the body. You know, meaning if a person is faking their death, so and they get shoved or they get pushed or they get hit, the person will grimace or make some type of movement. So fine, we won't stab the body. We'll just push, shove, hit, something like that. Amrulei yomru rabban dachfu. So again, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua essentially appeal to just the basic derech eretz of the Baryonim, seeing they're going to say, this is how you treat the bodies of your rabbis. Paschuli baba nafak. So it worked. The Baryonim leave the body alone and they take Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai out of the city. Get ready. Kimat al-Hasam. This is the fateful moment. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai has now been successfully smuggled out of Yerushalayim and he is standing face to face with the most powerful Roman general, a man by the name of, as we said before, Vespasian. What does Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai say to him? I'm sorry. Amrlei. Shalma alecha malka. He says, Shalom aleichem king, Shalom aleichem king. Amarlei, mechayeves trei katla. Vespasian says to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, I should kill you twice. Why? Chadad lav malka ano. Because I'm not the king, and you're calling me the king. So remember again, if I'm not the king and you call me the king, then what? That's an affront. To who? To the actual king. So I should kill you for that. Vesu, Imalka ana at haidna amaylo asiska b'gabai. And if you think that I'm the king, then Vespasian gives Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai a little bit of mussar. Why haven't you come to see me until now? If I'm the king and I've been here I don't know how long the siege was going on until this point, but it was going on for a while. Why didn't you come to see me until now? Amrlei dika amrit lav malka ano Ibra Malkaat, Di'ilav Malkaat, Lomimse Yushalayim Biyadcha. So Yochanan ben Zakkai says something absolutely amazing. He says, even if you're not a king now, you will become the king. You'll ask, how do I know that? Because only Yushalayim only falls to great people. And if you were not monarchical material, then you would not have the power to conquer Yerushalayim. The fact that you are going to be able to conquer Yerushalayim indicates to me that if you're not the king now, you are going to become the king. Skip down a little bit. Vidika Amrut. Imalkan amaylo ka'asis lagabayati. No? And ultimately, again, if you say that as to your second question, why didn't I come up until this point in time? Baryoni di'isban lo shavkinon. The baryonim who are manning the city did not let me come. So skip a little bit. Adahachi. So I'm now in number 7, 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 lines up from the bottom, right after the period. Adahachi, asi pristaka alai miromi. So literally, as of Yochanan ben Zakkai is standing there, speaking to Vespasian. So a messenger comes from Rome. And what does he say? He says to Vespasian, Amrlei, Kum, demis le Caesar. Stand up, for the Caesar has died. The Amri hano kashivi diromi lo sivach beresha. And the Roman Senate has voted, and you have been crowned the new Caesar. So can you imagine this? This is literally unfolding as Vespasian is standing with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. The messenger comes from Rome. Baruch Dayan Emes, Caesar's died. Mazel tov, you are the new Caesar. So listen to this. So skip down a little bit. The Gemara says, fine. Amrlei, so 2, 4, 5 lines up from the bottom. Amrlei, Omi achar dechach misei kulehai ad ha'idna amaylo osis legaboy. So again, they have another exchange where Vespasian says, obviously, Yochanan ben Zakkai, you're a very wise man. Right? Because you just said a few moments ago that I was going to become the king, and look, now I'm becoming the king. If you're so wise, why didn't you come to me until this point in time? Tirch of Yochanan ben Zakkai says, I already told you I couldn't. Fine. So listen to this. Amrlei, I'm now 4 lines up from the bottom, right after the exclamation point. Amrlei, Mezel Azilna, V'inish Achrini Mishadan. So Vespasian says to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, look, here's the deal. I'm now going to go back to Rome, and I'm going to dispatch another general to oversee this siege and finish off Yerushalayim. And essentially, he tells Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is, Jerusalem will fall. It's just a matter of time. We're not going anywhere. Right? And we have all the supplies we need. You guys are starving in there. It's only a matter of time until we break through the walls and we destroy the city and we destroy the Beis HaMikdash. But here's the deal. Ela bo'i mine midi de'atein lecha. Vespasian is incredibly impressed with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So he says something amazing. Tell me what you want and I'll give it to you. Tell me what you want. I'm impressed with you. I'm impressed by your bravery. I'm obviously impressed by the fact that you're clearly a very holy man. You were able to go ahead and foretell the fact that I'm going to become the king. So tell me what you want, and I will give it to you. So Amrlei, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asks for 3 things. The famous Gemara. 3 things. Number 1, Tein li Yavne v'chachameha. What does that mean? Tein li Yavne v'chachameha? Why Yavne? So remember, again, at this point in time, historically, the Sanhedrin had already left the Beis HaMikdash. Remember, the Sanhedrin used to meet in the Beis HaMikdash, what we call the Lishkas HaGozis, the Chamber of Hewn Stone. At this point in time, the Sanhedrin already left the Beis HaMikdash. The Sanhedrin already left Yerushalayim. The Sanhedrin resettled in Yavne. So rabbinic leadership was in Yavne. When Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, Tein li Yavne v'chachameha, what is he asking for? Spare rabbinic leadership. Why is he asking to spare rabbinic leadership? Because that's the continuity. Excellent. Because at the end of the day, if rabbinic leadership is spared, that means Torah will remain intact, and that means Klal Yisrael will be able to rebuild. No matter what happens, we will figure out a way to rebuild that which has been lost. Whereas if rabbinic leadership is destroyed, Chas V'Shalom, the Mesorah is an existential danger. And if the Mesorah is an existential danger, then it could be that Chas V'Shalom, Klal Yisrael won't rebound. So therefore, that's number one. Next, Shushilta de Rabbi Gamliel. What does that mean? Shushilta de Rabbi Gamliel. It literally means the chain of Rabbi Gamliel. Spare Rabbi Gamliel's family. Why Rabbi Gamliel's family? So firstly, it was the Nasi, right? But why else? Rabbi Gamliel traced his lineage all the way back to David HaMelech. So what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is doing over here is he is asking to preserve the Davidic line. Why does he want to preserve the Davidic line? Mashiach. So this, by the way, is amazing. This. What do you see? What is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai doing? What is he doing? He's planning for the future. He's ensuring the continuity. He is planning for the future. We're going to see this is the godless of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, a forward thinker, never allowing himself to be lost in the present or the past, but always trying to figure out how can we build the future. Right? Meaning, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, well, actually, we'll see. We'll see what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is really highlighting over here, but he's asking, preserve rabbinic continuity, preserve the Mesorah, pave the way for Mashiach, and number three was Va'asvasa de Messiah de Rabbi Tzadok, and send a doctor to heal Rabbi Tzadok. Rabbi Tzadok, again, the Gemara discusses, was fasting for the salvation of Yerushalayim. He was so thin, so emaciated, so weak, the Gemara says, that when he would swallow a fig, right, literally again, you would see it descending into his body. Why Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asks for Rabbi Tzadok, we're going to see unfold in just a little bit. Fine. So these are the three things that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asks for. Tein liyavne v'chachameha. Give me the familial line of Rabbi Gamliel and a doctor for Rabbi Tzadok. Vespasian says, okay. Vespasian says, no problem, I'll give you all of those things. Now, watch how the story ends. So what happens? Vespasian goes to Rome. Where does Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai go? Goes back into Yerushalayim. Right? He goes back into Yerushalayim. He goes back into the city. Now again, he understands the Bar Yom. Aye, what about the fact that Bar Yom are going to realize that he lied? They're not going to do anything to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. That they won't do. He, to a certain degree, is untouchable by the Bar Yomim. He goes back into the city, and here's what's amazing. Kari Ali Rav Yosef, Vitim Rabbi Akiva, Meshiv Chachamim Achor, V'da'atam Yisakel. Rav Yosef, and essentially Rabbi Akiva, when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai told them what happened, you know what they greeted him with? You know what they said to him? You're a fool. Can you imagine this? You're a fool. You're a fool. Why are you a fool? Why would they tell me he's a fool? He bought you label Neymar Lay, Lishav Kinu Hada Zimna. You fool. You had a Vespasian. The most powerful man in the civilized world said to you what? Said to you what? Tell me whatever you want. I like you. You're a nice guy. I respect you. You're very wise. You're very brave. Tell me whatever you want. Whatever you want, I'll give you. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you fool. Why didn't you say to him, leave. Leave. Call your troops off. Spare Yerushalayim. Spare the Beis HaMikdash. Lift the blockade. Lift the siege. Let us go on with our lives. L'shavkei hadazimna. Just this one time. Leave us alone. So you see something amazing. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, in an incredible act of bravery, feigns his death, gets smuggled out of the city, meets face to face with Vespasian. A doctor for Rabbi Tzadok, and what's the hero's welcome he gets when he comes back? You're a fool. You're an absolute fool. Why didn't you go for the gold? Why didn't you ask Vespasian to go home and spare the city? Why didn't Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai do that? So the Gemara said, listen to this. V'hu savar, he felt, the dilma kule hai lo avit. What does that phrase mean? Dilma kule hai lo avit? Maybe Vespasian wouldn't. You know, sometimes when someone says, sure, I'll do whatever you want, I'll do whatever you want means parentheses, as long as it's reasonable, attainable, and easy. But if it's going to be too wrong, I'm not going to do it for you. So, Dilma Koli Hailo Avit, V'hatsala Purta Nami Lohavi. So, this is amazing. You know, there's a concept of Tafasta Meruba Lo Tafasti. You've heard that concept. What does that mean, Tafasta Lo Tafasta? If you grab too much sugar, you know, I'll give you a simple, there used to be, I remember when I was a kid, there was this contest they used to have where somebody would win an opportunity to go like into a store. And you had, they give you like a shopping cart, and you have like, you know, whatever amount of time to gather whatever you want. And it was amazing to see. You see some people go ahead, and mamash, they try to grab whatever they can, and they throw it into the cart. And what ends up happening? So there's one, well, that's one type of person. And then there's another type of person that methodically grabs this, grabs this, grabs this, grabs this. So what's amazing is who ends up with more? The second person. Because the person who just grabs indiscriminately, first of all, you don't know what you're grabbing. You don't know what you're grabbing. You're just grabbing anything that's in front of you. The person ultimately, again, grabs one by one, may end up with, quote unquote, qualitatively less, but ultimately ends up with things that are either of higher value, greater importance. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says like this, Vespasian asked me for whatever I want, right? Whatever I want. I don't know this guy. I don't know him. And I don't know whatever I want. I don't know what that means in his lexicon. If I ask for something too big, I run the risk of what? Of getting nothing. Why? Because you have to understand something. With Vespasian, it's not the pshat that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai could say, you know what? Let me ask to spare you shalayim. What's the worst case scenario? Because she'll say, no, 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 ask for something else. No, I can't do that. What's your second request? There's one shot at this. There's one shot at this. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, what I was concerned about was that if I ask for too much, I end up with nothing. I end up with nothing. And therefore I made the conscious decision to ask for less, knowing that what? That there was a greater probability that my requests would be granted. So the rabbis are telling Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you're a fool. You could have saved us all. You could have saved the Beis Hamikdash. You could have saved Yerushalayim. You could have saved everyone. You could have saved everyone. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, I had to make a calculated decision. I could end up with nothing or I could guarantee something. Who was correct? We don't know. Was correct. If Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai would have asked to spare Yerushalayim, maybe Vespasian would have granted it. Who knows? Who knows? But understand something. This is what it means to live in the post-prophetic era. When there is no Navi, when there is no Urim the Tumim, the only thing you can do is make the best decision based on the information you have at hand. What you are seeing over here unfolding in front of you in this Gemara is a brand new age. The age of Nevuah is over. Now, it's been over for a while already. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, look, I had to make the best decision I could in the moment, gauging the circumstances to the best of my ability. Was I right? Was I wrong? Who knows? All Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai could say is, I made the call. I made the call. Was it the right call? Could I have spared your shine? Maybe yes, maybe not. And the truth is, we'll never know. We absolutely will never know. Because understand, obviously, because Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was a gadol hador. Guess what? So is Rabbi Akiva. Right? And Rabbi Akiva clearly feels that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made the wrong call. He felt that he should have had more bitachon, more emunah. Kadosh Baruch Hu was putting Vespasian right in front of you. Go for the gold. Ask to spare the Beis Hamikdash. Ask to spare Yerushalayim. But again, you understand the tension over here. And so much of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's life, as we're going to see, centers around this same exact dynamic. I don't know what to do. Life is not black and white. There is not a clear decision. So what do? You make the best decision you can with the information you have at hand and hope that it's the right one. Yes?
Why would Hashem make it that the destiny finds out based upon one person's decision?
That happens all the time. Isn't that the story of Purim? Isn't that the story of Hanukkah? Isn't it the story of Klal Yisrael in the desert with Moshe Rabbeinu? Great people always determine destiny. Also, it might have happened. I'm sure even if Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai didn't do something or did something, there might have been someone else. But history is always determined by the actions of individuals.
So, what I'm saying is that if Beis Hamikdash was to be spared, then Rabbi Yochanan would be...
You can't take that approach to life. If you take that approach to life, then you remove the entire essence of Bechira. Right? Everything that happens is supposed to happen. So, but the way we exercise our choice has a dramatic impact on things. Remember again, the moment you get into that line of thinking, if the Beis HaMikdash was supposed to be destroyed, then whatever Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai would have done, it wouldn't have made a difference. But I'm just saying, you understand the problem with that approach, is that that means, so Klal Yisrael actions didn't make a difference? Meaning you can't, it's an excellent question, but understand that it goes to the heart of Bechira. Everything that happens, happens because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wills it. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately is Hayahobe V'yeya, right? Past, present, future, simultaneously. But yet we believe that our actions still have a dramatic impact. So could it have been, was there an alternate version of this story where Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asked Vespasian to spare the Beis HaMikdash, and Vespasian said, okay, yes. There is a version of that story. There could have been a potential outcome like that. Could that have happened? Could it not have happened? You never know. You never know. And it's the same thing in life in general. Each of us make decisions. Those decisions put our lives in a particular direction. Had I chosen differently, the direction would have been something different. So, you know, what would have happened had Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asked Vespasian? Who knows? Maybe it would have delayed the Korban by a year, 6 months, 10 years, 30 years, altogether. Who knows? Who knows? But this is the life without a nevuah. You just don't know what the script is.
So,
they were upset at him for not making the right choice. They felt that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu... I'm sorry? It's the same thing. They wanted him to ask the spirit, right? They were upset because they felt if God is putting Vespasian in front of you, and the most powerful leader in the civilized world is saying, tell me what you want and I'll do it for you. My gosh, is that not Hashgacha Pratis? Like Mordechai says to Esther, Mi yodea im la'es kazo sigat l'malchus. Every single step followed. You feigned your death. The Bayonin didn't stab you. They didn't push you. Get out of the city. You have a one-on-one audience with his best patient. You just became Caesar right after you prophesied that 5 minutes ago. Kadosh Baruch Hu was putting, why is God doing all of this? Because you were supposed to be the savior of Yerushalayim. That's what they thought. Were they right? Again, who knows? Who knows? It's as I'm saying, these stories are so difficult because these are great people having to make decisions. And I guarantee you one thing. How do you think Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai felt after this exchange with Rabbi Akiva?
Not good.
Well said, right? Not good. And I guarantee you that Rabbi Yochanan, and by the way, when the Romans enter into Yerushalayim, they enter with a vengeance. Josephus chronicles that there were over 1 million Jews killed when the Romans entered into Yerushalayim. Besides the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, 1 million Jews butchered when Yerushalayim fell to the Romans. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai lives through that. He sees it. So you think that a day doesn't go by when he doesn't replay this over and over and over in his mind? Did I make the right choice? Could I have saved them? And at the end of the day, all he could keep telling himself is, I made the decision I felt I had to make given the circumstances I was in. Never knowing if he was right, never knowing if he was wrong. Could he have done more? Could he have done less? Who knows? Yes.
Yeah.
Chas v'shalom. Yeah. So I'm going to go outside and slash your tires, and I'm not responsible for that?
You are, but...
We're always... No, that... No. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, now again, do I think that after 120 HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you should have chosen the other way? I have no idea. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai acts in accordance with what he feels to be the best option as, but of course, everybody's responsible for the results of their Bechira. Otherwise, what's the purpose of Bechira if you're not responsible?
I thought Bechira within itself is like what is accountable for, like, here's your choice, and whatever's going to happen is going to happen.
No. No. The truth is, there's a partial truth to that. The partial truth to that is, I often don't control the results of things. But when you make a decision in life, and there's a ripple effect as a result of that decision, you absolutely are responsible for those ripple effects. Because you generated those ripple effects through the decisions that you made. Now, sometimes in life, I make a decision, and I look, this happens to all of us all the time. It looked good at the moment that I made it. And then something unintended comes about as a result of that. So how does the Kodesh Baruch Hu hold me accountable for that? You know, I don't know. Those are the cheshbonos of the Ribbono Shel Olam. I don't know how that works. But absolutely we're responsible for the ripple effects of our decisions. 100%. That's why Bechira is so profound. And that's why you have to think so carefully before you make decisions in life. Because I'm not just responsible for the decision right here and now. I'm literally responsible for what comes out of that decision later on. There are questions over here? So, yes. I don't know who said that.
I remember
hearing it. Yeah, I hope that's not true. I hope it's not true. I never heard that, but maybe you'll try to track down the source for that. I can't imagine that he'd be punished because remember again, he has to make a split second decision. And he has to make a decision about go for the gold and get nothing, or ask for the bronze and pretty much be assured that you're gonna get it. Could somebody be held accountable for that? I don't know, but if there's a source like that, I would love to see it. Yes.
I once heard that like not different than getting punished for, but he forgot because Hashem moved it from his mind to ask for shine.
I think Hashem took away that option from him.
They needed that.
No, but I think we like learned this somewhat over the time when Yaakov forgot to tell us like when Yaakov was referencing he forgot to mention.
Right, the Hashem Baruch Hu removes. I don't know. I would love to see that inside. I to be honest, I think it removes the power of the story. Right, the profundity of the story is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had to make a choice. Life is filled with incredibly difficult decisions, and sometimes you have to choose in a split moment, right or left. Right or left, and you just have to try to figure out what the right one is. And sometimes you look back and you say to yourself, great decision. Sometimes you look back and you say, bad decision. And sometimes you look back and you never know if you made the right decision. So I don't know. Again, I would be very interested. I've never seen any of these Meir Makomos that you guys are referencing. I would love to see it inside. But to me, I think it removes the power of the story. The power of the story is a great man who has to make a split-second decision that has a dramatic impact on the future of Klal Yisrael. Was he right? Was he wrong? You know, the easy answer always is to say he's right. People always say, of course he's right. What's the right that he's right? Right, we're here today. So, okay, we might have been here today with a base. I mean, you know, it's hard to know what's right, what's wrong. One thing is clear. He made the right decision in accordance with the information that he felt he had at hand. And by the way, so much of life is like that. You know, sometimes the worst thing we do to ourselves is we look back and we second-guess decisions that we made. And we say to ourselves, how could I have ever made a decision like that? But then when you replay it in your mind a little bit, you say to yourself, you know what? When I made that decision, I had this information, you know, this amount of information at my disposal. Now looking back, I have this amount of information at my disposal. So had I known then what I know now, I would have chosen differently. Shkoyach. But life doesn't work that way. When you have to make your decisions, you make them with the information you had in hand. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, correct, not correct, he made the best decision he could. But again, you see, had the Gemara not said anything, we would have never second-guessed Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, because how could we stand in Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? But when you see Rabbi Yosef, when you see Rabbi Akiva, literally jumping on him for the decision that he made, It gives us the space and it creates the necessity to analyze what's unfolding over here. Alright, we'll stop over here for today. We're not finished with this story. And we're not finished with the Hashkafic considerations, so we'll continue with the Shema Monday.